the blessings of love and respect we offer to all, in times past and present, who have opened the doors of wisdom, reuniting all beings with their intrinsic purity. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. The recitation of this rosary ever expands the awakening of faith in the three jewels, Bodhi, Dharma, and Sangha. Bodhi Saranam Gacchami, Dutyampi Tatyampi Sabaha. I turn to the perfect nature of truth for guidance. Again and yet again may it be so. Dharmam Saranam Gacchami, Dutyampi Tatyampi Sabaha. I turn to the teachings for guidance. Again and yet again may it be so. Sangam Saranam Gacchami, Dutyampi Tatyampi Sabaha. I turn to the holy order for guidance. Again and yet again may it be so. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Dukkha, the noble truth of suffering. Dukkha Samudaya, the noble truth of the origin of suffering. Dukkha Nirodha, the noble truth of the extinction of suffering. Dukkha Nirodha Gamini Patipada, the noble truth of the path that leads to the extinction of suffering. So long as these four noble truths are not understood, we shall wander in sorrow and ignorance. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. All formations are transient, anicca. All formations are subject to suffering, dukkha. All things are without a self, anatta. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Namo Prajna Paramita Hridaya, homage to the wisdom in the heart. Form is not different from emptiness. Emptiness is not different from form. This is the teaching of our spiritual ancestors, Gautama Buddha, and all the great teachers who have transmitted the Dharma to this holy day. Blessed is the knowledge of emptiness. Homage to the devotees of this and all paths of self-purification. May all find simplicity, the joyous and practical guide. The Dharma, being the contents of enlightenment, in which there is no bondage and no suffering, offers freedom from the cankers of ignorance and fear. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Sangha is the holy order of spiritual ancestors, monks, priests, and all those who follow and practice this path. Homage to the Sangha. Homage to all who are approaching this holy path. Homage to all who follow and establish this holy path. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. By compassionate comprehension that dissipates delusion, by compassionate aspiration that harms no one, by compassionate speech that makes for clarity, by compassionate self-discipline that brings no regret, by compassionate livelihood that brings no discredit, by compassionate endeavor that results in goodness, by compassionate mindfulness that proves this path, by compassionate awareness that leads to nirvana. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. With this recitation, I do confirm my acceptance of these three pure precepts. The precept of restraint and religious observances, the precept of obedience to all good laws, the precept to benefit all sentient beings. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. With this recitation, I do confirm my acceptance of these 10 grave prohibitive precepts. Not to lead a harmful life, nor to encourage others to do so. Not to take that which is not given. Not to commit or participate in unchaste conduct. Not to tell lies nor practice believing the fantasies of authority. Not to use intoxicating drinks or narcotics, nor assist others to do so. Not to publish other people's faults. Not to extol oneself and slander others. Not to be avaricious in bestowal of the teachings. Not to be angry. Not to speak ill of this religion or any other. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. In the practice of loving kindness, in the practice of pure attention, in the practice of ever-expanding faith, in the practice of constant devotion, in the practice of inquiry through correct dhyana, in this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Oh, happy blessed day. Oh, happy blessed place. Oh, happy blessed time. Oh, happy blessed path. Oh, happy blessed opportunity. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Here in humble submission, in order to experience this most perfect now, I deeply vow and sacrifice all thoughts, all tensions, all pressures, and desires. I am born of karma. I am heir to karma. I abide in karma, and I am supported by karma. Whatever I do creates karma, and I shall surely experience this karma. The merit for all good acts I do freely offer to all beings. Dutyampi tatyampi savaha. Again and yet again may it be so. Willingness is the name of the key to the gate of awakening. For even to awaken from deep sleep and face the new day, there must be the willingness to do it. Here in my hand is the opportunity, and the way is clear beyond the gate of thought and desire. There is no self and other, as the awareness of pure, undisturbed consciousness slips into all consciousness. We are here to end suffering. If ending suffering is more important than anything, we will end suffering. If ending suffering is not more important than anything, we will not end suffering. If I am suffering, it is because I am choosing something over ending suffering. We are not here to create and cling to beliefs. We are here to pay attention. We are here to use everything in our experience to see how we cause ourselves to suffer, so we can drop that and end suffering. Would you like to look at this morning?
Well, I'd just like to participate.
Participate, that's always good.
Yeah, because I've been talked out of participating for about 2 weeks now in group. And what goes on, and it's still going on a little bit right now, is the just an immense amount of self-consciousness and kind of like, okay, so what am I going to look at? What am I going to share? It needs to be said in a certain way. It needs to get a certain result. It needs to kind of be something. I need to be a somebody. Mm-hmm. That's the general orientation.
So I've been stopped from participating in the last 2 weeks because what goes on prior to the participation is a lot of conversation about what am I going to participate in, you know, just having some clarity around it and where's it headed. And
Exactly. It needs to be, it either needs to be really profound. It needs to be really funny. Uh-huh. It needs to be what he said, she said, or what she said or he said. You know, it's like it kind of goes around and. So it's basically this place of, it's like this voice screaming, you don't know who you are. Mm-hmm. And so you need to kind of look and find out.
Mm-hmm. Have it all figured out.
Have it all figured out. Have a big performance, you know. Mm-hmm. Get everybody to notice you and think that you're excellent in this way or that way, mm-hmm. or that you're seeing stuff. So anyway, that's what goes on. Mm-hmm.
What goes on, and it sounds like, you know, kind of exhausting actually, and really puts the brakes on participation.
It does, and I look at it too in terms of, like, you know, I'm using group as the example right now, but of course, you know, I just laid out my life, mm-hmm. you know, or mm-hmm. the kind of life of mm-hmm. whoever, you know, I'm trying to be.
Yeah.
It kind of goes on, and I don't think I ever noticed it so acutely until. I mean, I was always aware of kind of like a self-consciousness and insecurity and, you know, the desire to be noticed either through kind of what I said, what I did, what I wore clothing-wise, how I was, just like a real sense of like no groundedness in a way, you know, I don't quite know how to say that. It's just kind of the overall experience in my life in general. And it just is perfect here in group because it all shows up.
It sounds like a big insight in, you know, it not being the content, it's the process. Yeah. So seeing, you know, that what's going on here in group is not confined to group, mm-hmm. and how it has affected your entire life.
Yeah. Yeah, and there's another piece of it too, as you said that, which kind of I see, and that is that, you know, and I don't know if this is just kind of more ego or, you know, but there's, it's like I think there's I really want to participate in life, you know, like there's, and all of these things that are done just kind of get in the way of it, you know, it's like if I wasn't trying to be a somebody. If I wasn't so concerned, or you know, I'm using I, and you know, you can reflect it however, but you know, if I didn't care what people thought of me, if I wasn't so concerned of what I looked like, or if I wasn't so, you know, these are all the layers that are there, and then of course the judge who would say, well, you know, so now you have to, and then it goes through that list. And you can, it just gets into a soup, and then of course, it's, well, I'm just not going to participate.
Yeah. So it's feeling that there is this genuine desire to participate. Excuse me.
Yeah, again, in life in general, not only in group, but like in life in general. And I don't know if this is a story, I'll just say it, but this place of like, you know, I don't know how to do that. I don't know how to do that without being all these somebodies, you know. So there's this incessant looking to like, well, what's the way to do it? You know, and that's, it's kind of funny on some level because it's like, how to be? How do I be? It's just insane.
But what just arose for me is what came up recently about Buddhism being the practice of not. Like, you know, you're in a discovery and you're finding what it's not.
Yeah.
You know, this is not participation and this is not participation, and it's that whole discovery. And so now you know these things are it, and that, and you keep on that path of discovery.
Yeah. Yeah, the negative way.
Yeah, the negative way.
Yeah, that's the yeah. So I don't really know what to say, you know. I guess it's totally okay that what's coming up right now. I'll have to listen to the recording at one point too. But you know, maybe this isn't even it either. You know, I just it's like so kind of I guess it's just kind of an open slate.
It's open slate.
Yeah, like who knows?
Yeah.
You know, and for so many years there was this place of like, yeah, I know who I am, you know, and then trying to like really perfect these somebodies.
Yeah.
And if I got the right result, you know, if people laughed at what I said, well, that's good. So that is who I am. If they didn't, then self-hate would come and say, oh, well, you know, you got to do it differently.
You got to try harder on that one.
You got to try harder. Exactly. Yeah. You know, so. Unbeknownst to me, you know, so much of awareness practice for me has always been this this place of like self-improvement, you know, which, and I know people talk about it a lot, it's, you know, and it's, and self-hate's favorite thing to get hold of is spiritual practice doesn't start till the beating start.
It loves to beat you with the fact that
it's its favorite tool. And it can get away with it incessantly because it constantly has me.
Yeah.
So anyway, I kind of don't want to say a whole lot more about it, but that's kind of what's going on. And the other piece is that I noticed that anger, you know, I've spoken of a number of times about kind of the anger and the rage that, you know, I perpetually am kind of having to experience on some level. I realized that, and I've known this, I think, for a little while, but it feels good to just kind of out it, and that is that the refusal to participate is an expression of my anger. Yeah. So, again, it goes back to childhood. So actually being in group is like sitting at the dinner table with my family, like to a T, where, what I experienced just sitting here is just like sitting at the dinner table, you know, where it's just kind of tongue-tied and not really knowing where I fit into the family, not really, there's a role scripted for me, you know, to not be happy or to have a problem or to have something wrong, and you know, And then being really frustrated and resentful and kind of jealous that everybody else seemed to really accept themselves and, you know, whatever was going on, mm-hmm. kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And so, it, you know, from childhood through now, the way that that kind of got dealt with was that I get angrier and angrier and angrier, and it would turn inwards mm-hmm. as opposed to get, mm-hmm. you know, screamed outwards. Mm-hmm. And how that got expressed was, well, I'm just not going to participate. There's nothing you can say to me that I'm going to respond to. I'm going to sulk, mm-hmm. and I'm just going to sit here and not play, mm-hmm. basically. So as a child, that was kind of, you know, very demonstrative. And I'm noticing now that it still goes on in a kind of more subtle or not so subtle way in group. Like, I don't care. I'm not going to participate. Mm-hmm. And it's just so childish. It's so kind of like the only person that hurts is the human heart.
Yes, and you know, seeing that process, that a very familiar and old process of kind of withdrawing, I'm not going to participate, I don't know how to participate here, so, you know.
Yeah.
So, four-letter word, everybody, I'm just going to, you know, withdraw.
Totally.
And yet, you started the conversation early on by saying that there is this desire to participate, so the heart is like overriding that that process in a way.
Yeah.
And I mean, you have to look and see that, you know, and maybe it's the heart that just called you to put the hands up today and say, you know, this is what, you know, I desire to participate. It's a genuine desire.
Yeah, I think there is a genuine, I mean, I don't think I'd be here if there wasn't. You know, I mean, that's like, it's kind of, and there is, you know, it would be absurd to sit here and side with conditioning and say, like, oh, the genuine desire is to feel crap, you know, like crap mm-hmm. all the time, and, you know, feel, you know, resentment and jealousy and anger towards others. And, you know, I mean, that's just, there's no way. There's just no way, kind of thing. There is. There's a great place of sincerity that that cares and loves and wants to. I think it's... you know, it goes back to childhood. I think I wanted to be part of the family. Mm-hmm. You know, I think whoever that was, that little boy was, mm-hmm. you know, I think genuinely he wanted to have fun at dinner and, mm-hmm. and around the family. Yeah. It's just that, I don't know, like, he lost his way, or there wasn't a role that was scripted for him, or, you know, I don't know exactly what that was. But, I don't know, maybe this is cool. Maybe this is the opportunity to, you know, transcend what that was, and the kind of egoic identity that, or identities mm-hmm. that come in, and as I kind of was laying out, are all those somebodies trying to cover that deep hurt and deep disappointment of not participating, of not feeling, you know, of not being allowed to just express who David is, like, who is David?
Yeah.
You know, if it wasn't for the act and the show, mm-hmm. and the performance and the, you know, the look and the whatever else goes on, mm-hmm. if it wasn't for that, boy, what would it be?
Yeah.
You know, what, who is he?
Yeah.
You know, is he enthusiastic? Is he, I don't know. You know, it's that, I don't know.
Yeah, it's that I don't know, and, you know, what would he be? Mm-hmm. A great process of discovery.
Yeah.
And that little, possibly that little kid gets to come to dinner now and sit with someone who really loves him mm-hmm. and make it okay to be who he is.
Yeah. Make it okay to be who he is. Make it okay for him to participate. And, you know, and I do catch glimpses of it, you know, like on the way over today and stuff, you know. The excitement of the snow and the enthusiasm of being out in nature, and just, you know, there is enthusiasm. There's you know, there's genuineness and there's authenticity, and there's someone who genuinely loves life and who's, you know, super happy, and he's in love with everything. And yet that is just like, it's, I don't know, it's just like the lid is on that in a way.
Yeah, he sounds like a good person to hang out with.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, sometimes. Yeah, he's, yeah, so. feels good to just open up a little bit and speak, not kind of bottle it.
Yeah.
So, thank you, Sequoia.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Rebecca. Well, I related to quite a bit of that, and it seems to touch on an insight that I had about my enneatype, or sort of my kind of child, mm-hmm. my basic conditioning. And it's around family, and I'm going to be seeing family over the holidays, and. I saw this pattern kick up in the last day or two about trying to take care of things that the way it's going to be, you know, there when I'm with family.
So kind of planning how it's going to go and how to take care of things.
Yeah.
When you get with family.
Yeah, yeah, and yes. Planning is big. But there's planning, and then there's taking care of mm-hmm. people, mm-hmm. so that everybody's all right. Mm-hmm. And I was starting to go to these really ridiculous lengths to make sure everybody was going to be all right and that I was helpful. In the whole mix, mm-hmm. it has to do with my mother, who's kind of a bit of an invalid, and you know all that. So, but I caught it. Mm-hmm. I caught it.
So you caught that you were in this process of like trying to fix things that, or how to take care of. You said take care of
them. So them. So they'll be all right. Uh-huh. Yeah. And actually, it's not so they'll be all right. It's so I'll be all right. And what I saw was that, so I will be all right with how I project they see me.
Mm-hmm. So you will be all right with the way you project they see you.
Yes, uh-huh. That double reverse projection. Wow. Uh-huh. Thing, yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah, and the two enneatype is, I'm just seeing layers and layers of how that is manifest in my life. Mm-hmm. And what I recorded, this all dropped in about 1:30 this morning, and what I was recording that was that I was projecting that what they want, jumping in and filling the need, and what really dropped in, and this is so simple, is I don't really know what they want. It's like, the only human being that I can know who wants something is this one. And that one wasn't even taken into the equation.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
It was not even a blip on the radar.
So really seeing that, you know, all this energy was going into a scenario of projection about what they would need and how you would fill that. And seeing that really the only one you could possibly ever know who, you know, what they need is this person right here, and that person wasn't even a blip on the radar.
Yeah, that was the one want that I could actually be accurate about, mm-hmm. was not even considered.
Wow. That was good to see.
Yeah, it felt really big. Yeah, it felt really big, and I see how I do that all the time with the dogs. Mm-hmm. You know, that same projection thing. Mm-hmm.
Projecting what they need and how to fill it, and mm-hmm. and the whole time not looking at what the person who's caring for the dogs may need and how to take care of her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just when you said that, what dropped in was that really this may seem so obvious to everybody that's not a two, but that blows wide open what it means to take care of.
Close wide open, that means to take care of. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, I don't know what comes to mind is Sherry talks about raising children, uh-huh. and that, you know, we're just, for sure, we're going to mess them
screw
up.
Them
up. So you might as well do it in a way that makes you happy.
Yeah.
So in a way, that's what You're taking care of the need of the person that's doing, you know? And so do what makes that person happy, because those folks are just going to think whatever they think.
Yes.
No matter if you stand on your head and you turn purple.
And that element, that degree of lack of control is just appalling. It's appalling to conditioning, you know?
It is appalling.
It's so liberating.
It is liberating. Imagine, you know, just going out and doing what makes Rebecca happy.
Oh God, I felt a shudder just when you said that. A shudder come up my spine. It's so funny. Like, the physical reaction to do what makes Rebecca happy is huge. It's really interesting to say this.
Because truly, if it's contingent on getting all those other guys happy before it, you know, can take place here with the only person that you're really in relationship with and that you, you know, really know what makes her happy. It's just...
Yeah. And to give her what she wants. I mean, so when I saw that I was going to these really stupid, extraordinary lengths, I stopped. Mm. I said to myself, no, it was basically around how my mother's going to get somewhere, and I was going to sacrifice time with my son so that I could be a part of that. Mm-hmm. And I said, no, we're not, we're going to stay the course, we're going to take the time that we want. And and it felt,
making a decision to indeed stay with what was going to make this being happy instead of going to that place of projecting what other folks may need.
Yeah. Like, finally.
Finally.
Not in a self-hating way, but in a really, like, homecoming kind of way.
That's what came up for me, just getting home.
Thank you.
Jen.
So many things. A number of months ago, when I was in a time where I was really struggling, it just dropped in that, I mean, and since then, it's actually come up a bunch in Sangha, but and it's nothing new, but just this concrete image of, like, talking about what's going on here with this person as just, it's like, I just had this image of, you know, we talk about awareness is everything. And it's like, it's just, so it would be possible to just be awareness inside of this form, looking out through these eyes, kind of in that scientist way.
Right.
And like, wow. And then listening to, it's like we're at an awareness convention. Right? So it's awareness has, like, been assigned to all these, to, like, inhabit these different forms, you know, and then we come together. Mm-hmm. And so we're at this round table, and so someone's reporting, like, you know what awareness is doing over here? Is there's this thing around, you know, needing to really take care of people. And it's like, and I'm over here like, wow, that's so interesting, because what awareness does over here is, you know?
Yeah, that's a very cool image of just seeing, and you know, this being inhabiting the whole field of awareness, and you know, the what comes with projector. You know, we see through the eyes of this being, and you know, reporting from the front over here. This is going through this. This is what awareness. You know, what I see in this field of awareness, and then coming together and everybody sharing what.
Because we get, like, to see this bigger picture.
And all the pieces look kind of, you know, it does provide us with a bigger picture.
It really relates, actually, to something that dropped in and sitting this morning of, like, so we had a guidance day yesterday, which is just such a gift, and it's such a fascinating thing to see the way that we as Sangha pass insights around, and that they get, like, well, one image is like bigger, but I also have that image of like, you talk about practices of wearing away, you know, like water running over a stone and it becomes smoother and smoother and smoother. So, I mean, I would hear someone say something like, one person referred to a retreat that I had facilitated some time ago. Another person, I had spoke to one person who talked about something that they added to a facilitator's thing. And then later in the day, someone else referred back to what that person had put on the facilitator. You know, so it's like this, wow, it's this amazing process of like, we're handing these insights and these awarenesses all around.
And we don't even have to be in the same room with
one another. We don't have to be in the same room. And we don't have any idea what's, you know?
Yeah.
And it's like, it's all just awareness passing back and forth to awareness. Mm-hmm.
Like we don't have any idea how these insights affect the larger field of awareness and what that triggers in someone else.
And it takes me back to that, to the very first conversation in the morning that we were talking about that, you know, because there's so much that the awareness in this form can relate to. You know, it's like, oh yeah, the awareness over here does a lot of that too. And that there's just this place, it feels like it gives this wide open space to report about anything.
Yeah.
It's just going on.
Yeah.
Because if it's just this whole thing that we're kind of, I don't know, doing together, it's not the best word, but looking at together.
Yeah.
You know, if this like, the, I don't know, it breaks down a little bit, but just to be clunky about it, you know, how the awareness of life gets pulled off into an illusion of separation, if we're kind of just looking at that together, then just simply seeing without judgment, without ownership, anything of what's passing through here, it's like, well, I'll just throw this out in case this is a piece of what we're looking at.
And it's kind of like what you said in the beginning, like a science convention. I mean, if you're coming from that place of inquiry and detachment like a scientist and just like throwing it out without having it make a whole lot about us, our own personal awareness that's not happening to anybody else, it's very freeing.
So, I don't know if it relates, but I was also relating to the magic of the snow. And got up early yesterday. Sadie loves the snow. She loves the snow. And I do too, but I confess, I think my favorite thing is how much she loves the snow. And I mean, I know it. I said to her, the night before, I was like, you are going to be so sad tomorrow. You know, she doesn't know. She just goes to bed. And I just watch her. Like, I open the door, and she walks out. And it's like, I mean, she doesn't say anything.
She doesn't need to say anything. Like,
and she just starts bounding. And she rolls around and she puts her nose in it and she slides down hills and it is the cutest thing. Oh my gosh. So we just spent the longest time before the schedule just jumping around and going all over the place and crawling over branches and under, you know, just so much fun. And it was like everything is art. I mean, it's just, it's extraordinary. The different patterns that things make on, you know, if it gets to a certain level on branches and the whole tree becomes one thing, and the exquisite patterns on the fence of the garden, and, you know, what catches the snow, and that, oh my gosh. And what was so funny was, it's like, I heard myself kind of say, well, it's like science fiction, you know, this white stuff just comes down, and I thought, the whole thing is like science fiction. The snow is amazing, but the moon, I mean, that's normal.
Right.
Rain and, you know, grass and human life and dogs and snails and, you know, snakes and trees, and that's normal, but snow. It was just kind of like another window into like, I mean, the whole thing is an incredible miracle.
It's an incredible miracle, and truly the fact that snow only comes periodically
catches
our attention, yeah. And we see the art in it and the beauty in it when you say that, my gosh, every moment, everything that's happening is art and beauty.
Yeah, you know, it reminds me, as Aruna, to the guide recently, and I said something like, again, it was kind of that experience of just feeling like reporting what was going on. I said, it seemed like there's a bit of a dry spell happening, blah, blah, blah. And the response was, maybe. Or maybe the extraordinary is becoming ordinary.
Maybe the extraordinary is becoming ordinary.
And that just came up as you said that the gift of something like snow and seasons and is that it reminds us that it's all extraordinary.
Yeah.
It's all extraordinary.
Truly. Truly. Yeah. You know, I'm reminded that, you know, sometimes when it's really cold like this, I wish it was 70 degrees and you know, but... Yeah. But truly, it's like the same thing. If it was 70 degrees all the time.
We would want something different, or we would want a gap that we love it.
Yep, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. So, just to be in that field of awareness, enjoying it all, and not becoming... the challenge is not to be going to sleep with it.
Yeah,
I saw that. And to just stay with open eyes to the beauty and magic, but all just...
Yeah, that's true. Staying in the awareness, that's really been, again, the focus of practice for me in the last little while, just floating in awareness, just attention on awareness, just experiencing whatever's here.
Exactly.
You know, whatever's here, pain, beauty, depression, you know, they're all labels. Mm-hmm. But just tension on awareness as it all, as life moves through, everything that it moves through.
And who's to say whether that's the whole reason we're in this body? Mm-hmm. To just observe and experience all of that.
Yeah, and that's just fun to get together and report out.
Yeah, and report on it.
I was listening to about Sadie and the snow. I was actually reminded of this dog we used to have, we haven't had for a few years, but when we first, we actually moved up here. She was a San Francisco dog, so she didn't know snow, and we moved up here in the spring, and that summer we were up in the mountains hiking, and it was early in the summer, so there were still some big patches of snow. And I remember the first time she discovered that, you know, and it was like she, you know, put her paw out, and then you could just see the light go on, and she just started sliding down one side and back the other, and she thought it was the greatest thing she'd ever seen. And I just love that moment of, you know, awareness of, oh my God, where has this been all my life, you know? And it feels like I've brought it up partly because it was just shared, but also because it feels like I had a moment like that. Although I have to say before I go on, now we have cats, and they don't have that relationship. You open up the door and say, why don't you go out there and see it? It's like, no, I'll go back by the wood stove. But I've been really attending a lot to sensations and feelings in the body, and because for a long time my practice with them was, you know, trying to it was an inquiry that wasn't really an inquiry, it was a trying to figure out what was going on in order that it would stop. Mm-hmm. And but yet genuine in a way, you know, well, what is this and where does it come from? And so
there was a discovery going on, or an inquiry. There was a goal.
Was a goal, right? And there was someone with an agenda, mm-hmm. and someone with an opinion, and so sometime this week I was trying to do that with a particular process, and you know, analyze it, and you know, and I got, you know, that's not working. You know, that's not getting me anywhere. And, you know, so I finally got to, let's just be with it. You know, when it comes up, let's just sit down and be with how it feels and what the sensations are. And So then yesterday it occurred to me to, as I was in one of those places where I had this set of feelings, and I said, what if I just try to describe in the recorder what that's like, what those sensations are like? And I sat there and I started talking, and I said, no, that's not, you know, all the words were about interpretation, you know? And I thought, I can't describe what that feels like. All I can do is feel it. And it was kind of like what I project goes on with the dog seeing snow. It's like, oh, I get it. I can't do that. That doesn't assist anything.
So just a real moment of discovery as you sit with the recorder trying to describe what's going on in terms of sensations and realize it's all interpretation.
Right, all of it was.
There's no way to describe it. There's only the possibility of being with it.
Right. Yeah, there would be that, well, they go, well, it's kind of like, and they say, no, that's a, you know, that's a description of it. That's, you know, where I would use words that, you know, I can't use any of those words. It isn't that. Mm-hmm. And it was amazing how then just, okay, so I put the recorder down and I just sat there and then it was passed. Mm-hmm. And then I was like, okay, well, what's next?
So you put the recorder down and you just sat with the sensations, mm-hmm. and they passed.
Yeah. And they also were not, all the interpretation of them was on the unpleasant side.
Uh-huh.
You know, this uh-huh. is, I mean, there was clearly, you know, that set of sensations and feelings is in this camp over here of things we don't, you know, kind of dark, kind of murky, kind of uncomfortable, mm-hmm. kind of wrong. Mm-hmm. And that's what all the words were tending towards, uh-huh. you know. Uh-huh. But when I just sat with it, I thought, well, actually, it's really not unpleasant at all. Mm-hmm. It's just what is.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So seeing that there was a tendency to mm-hmm. want to interpret or filter the sensations into a certain mm-hmm. category or meaning. And that just evaporated with just sitting with them, without that interpretation.
Yeah. It's like, you know, it's like more and more. It's just so clear that where conditioning lies is either, you know, trying to explain something that is, mm-hmm. trying to interpret, or trying to predict something that will be. Mm-hmm. And if neither of those is going on, there's not really much of a problem.
Yeah. So just seeing the impact or the input of mm-hmm. conditioning, if there is a tendency to try and explain what's going on or predict what's going to happen, all of that, mm-hmm. and that, and truly just being here now, there's not a whole lot of problem.
I this weekend I had all this, you know, conditioning had all this expectation that because it was going to be a snow weekend and I was supposed to actually be somewhere else out of town and that wasn't possible, and it was like it set up this, oh well, then we can do this and we can do that, and you know, I had this great plan of all these things that I had not been able to get to, and there was no way any of that could happen because I was the only person home and there was all this stuff that needed to be done because of the snow and the heat and the gardens and the that all that stuff that I thought would be a wonderful snow day was just not actually in life's plan.
It was a good conditioning plan, but it wasn't life's plan.
And if I'd stayed in, oh my God, now I didn't get to do that and I didn't get to do mm-hmm. that, I would have had a terrible day. But it was just like, oh well. Oh well, that's not what we're doing today, apparently.
That's not what we're doing today, apparently. This is what we're doing, and it sounds like you just had the willingness not to stay in that plan that conditioning had created, and that would have opened the door to a lot of suffering.
Yeah.
And instead, just doing, it sounds like, what was just in front of you, what was presented.
Yeah. And I have to say, as I'm hearing that back, that I think that. I can give a lot of credit to the building that willingness muscle for abandoning plans 2 years of working meditation.
Working meditation.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I've really seen lately, and I've actually was doing a little part-time job in town this weekend for someone, and finding, you know, just being asked to do this and that, and then saying, oh, by the way, could you do this? And never mind that, would you do this? And I thought, boy, this is just like working meditation. You know, it's like, you know, I don't have any stories about any of this. That's what you do. You show up and you get your job, and then maybe it changes, and you don't say no, and you just keep doing it. And I thought it's so helpful to be trained in that way. Because I think a lot of people aren't, you know.
Oh, yeah.
I think a lot of people say, well, I don't want to do that, or, you know.
Or I started doing this.
Why
are you telling me to do something else? Right. So seeing the benefits of again, willingness to show up and do years of working meditation.
Yeah.
And the training that's occurred with that, to just the training to be with life and to just do what life presents next. Yeah.
Yep.
I've been seeing hands over here. Anna.
When I saw the snow starting to fall, there was just of excitement. And the first thing that dropped in was, Francis the cat has never seen snow before. I can't wait to see, you know, what he makes of it tomorrow. And it was just, I see like the excitement of a projection of beginner's mind. And that experience of the Buddha at the door, like the snow is like an experience of the Buddha at the door. So in the email class assignment that we did recently, there's that exercise to, the way that it was set out was that if the Buddha were there at the door, we would, or we can, you know, be fully awake and be fully there instantly, and to practice greeting every moment as the Buddha at the door. Uh-huh. And with the snow, it was like what I heard this morning, that it was like waking up to the extraordinariness of nature that's there in every moment, and the snow was just like the, you know, the footer of the door, kind of reminding us of that.
Taking the occasion of the snow to bring you back to the practice of Buddha being at the door,
yeah,
and the fact that it's just brings you totally here, present, and to actually have the opportunity to be in the companionship of an animal who had never experienced snow before. So being able to project through that, through Francis, but that might be to see snow for the first time.
Right, he wasn't into it. He's into looking at it. But he's stepping off the board. I am, so that's it. Tomorrow, if the good Lord's willing and the snow don't rise, I'm heading off for just the next step of a spiritual adventure, and I can just feel how much of a support it is to participate today, and I'm heading into that. And one of the big things I'm seeing about it is that, so there's a receiving of it as a workshop in dropping standards.
So this next step for you, you're seeing it as a workshop in and dropping standards.
Yeah, and I just quote this morning how there's an attempt to pull that into standards. So how well are we going to do the workshop in dropping standards?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Yes. The next level of torture.
And just that, seeing that very familiar process where if attention is on conditioned mind, then all it can do is endlessly like reiterate that same thing. So a workshop in dropping standards in the workshop in dropping standards, then standards for catching that and dropping that, and standards, you know, so it's, I remember Sherry talking about that image of a man looking into a mirror holding a box of Quaker oats,
Yes.
That endless reiteration.
Yeah.
And what I'm saying is that there's a joke that I used to love when I was little that really points to this, that my grandmother used to tell, which is, it was a dark and stormy night, and the skipper said to the mate, "Mate, tell us a story." And the mate said, "It was a dark and stormy night," and the skipper says that, and she would just go on and on.
And seeing that as that's a great example of what conditioning does with a piece of content.
Which is why I think we find that joke so funny. It
yes.
points to something very, very so about that process. And so, and just also remembering that what I heard when Jerry was talking about the man looking into the mirror holding a box of Quaker oats, was the only way out of that endless, iteration is into awareness.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's the big like beginner's mind of, well, what might that be? What might that look like? What are some tools that we know from practicing that? And the one that I've been practicing today is just dropping awareness down to the to below the navel.
Yes.
And just kind of being aware from there that in that place there's no endless reiteration of standards about dropping standards about,
So practicing with bringing the navel, practicing bringing the awareness to the area. Sometimes that's referred to as the hara, that area just below the navel, and keeping the attention there, and seeing how that cuts out that endless loop of conditioning to just redo something from various angles, but it's the same thing over and over. But bringing the awareness down into that area of the hara just brings you. You didn't say this, but it sounds like it just helps to bring you here.
Truly, and it's like what was shared about awareness. Looking out through this form, it's like a way of imagining it looking out not just through the eyes, but through the. Just being aware from here. And that's been a great support.
It's very interesting. I've heard it said that that's like the second brain, and probably the important brain is the one in the hara. And to, to come from that place is a great antidote for living up in this brain.
Yeah, it's like a way of practicing. The body is the instrument of our awakening. What's the awareness receiving through the instrument here? And just the one of the big reminders that I'm keeping close in through the earbuds is, I've heard Sherry describe it as the only thing that makes anything stressful ever is egocentric karmic conditioning, self-hate. And the way that that's described in that Hafiz poem is, just something like, be still, just rest, don't do a thing, for your separation from God is the hardest work in this world.
Mm-hmm.
And just going into it all with those reminders just right here.
So for the benefit of those who might just hear this recording and not be able to see the visuals, it's a reference to recording and listening and using that to actually keep you into that state that's referred to by the Hafiz so beautifully, that our separation from God is the hardest work that we'll do in the world. And to keep the recording and listening practice as the tool to keep us at that place of center, where we are connected to God and not separated to God or to life or whatever, and seeing that that is one of your primary tools that you're taking with you on this next workshop into awareness.
Something has come up in response to everything everybody said this morning. They're all different, so I'm just going to pick one. But the thing about the extraordinary becoming ordinary, is interesting to me. And I wonder if that explains something I've been puzzling over. Last night I was considering how I don't really care about like doing things. I used to care so much about like having special experiences and like ideally it would be like traveling or you know some kind of like adventure and these kind of things. I recently got invited actually on a trip which was quite exotic and turned it down because it just mostly because just there's no way possibly work. But you know, I was looking at it and I didn't really want to go. Mm-hmm. And then I was thinking of the, you know, there's other people involved and kind of a lot of other people. And so, you know, that's kind of normal karma for me is, you know, there's a lot of people I don't want to go. And then, but then usually what would come after that would be, well, if I could go by myself, I would get really excited about that same thing. Mm-hmm. And I was like, but I don't really care. I don't particularly want to go. Mm-hmm. I just kind of want to stay put and just, you know, do the thing that we do every day. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, that was just really interesting to me. Mm-hmm. Same thing's happening like on Sundays. It used to be so important to like try to have some kind of special experience, you know, go on these super long walks and things. And but I've just kind of lost interest. Mm-hmm. I still do a lot on Sundays, but it's more about what really take care of me. You know, I would like to have an orderly environment to live in my hermitage, so mm-hmm. I usually attend to that, and it's really important to me to have exercise. And mm-hmm. But it's not about this kind of having these special experiences. And I was just like, what's that all about? And I wonder if I don't know if I can connect it very logically, but that thing about the ordinary, the extraordinary becoming ordinary, it's just like, this is, what happens here is extraordinary, and my experience of it is extraordinary, mm-hmm. but I can't see it anymore because I'm always in it, mm-hmm. and I feel satisfied by it. Mm-hmm. That's another thing I was thinking last night. I feel completely satisfied mm-hmm. with this life, and it used to be so not the case. And you know, so it's interesting. I hadn't really stepped back enough to see. Well, maybe that's just all that's going on is. I feel satisfied just by, you know, walking around here doing stuff, paying attention, mm-hmm. and I don't really need all that other stuff anymore.
So it sounds like what you're describing is, as even though I think I heard you say, even though it might not be a conscious awareness, but that's at some level taking in the extraordinariness of its ordinary life, and it's becoming deeply satisfying for mm-hmm. you in a way that you don't feel that need to seek outside experiences. Or, you know, it sounds like there was a time when there was a need to create, like, places to go, things to do that were like,
see.
Yeah,
we all see.
Places
to go, yeah, it's the other two.
Fill that need for the extraordinary experience. Uh-huh. And that I project that there's a shift happening where there's a sense or a taking in of that extraordinary on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah, well, I think there could be. It's a little bit speculative. And the last night I was going, gosh, I wonder if I'm depressed. Mm-hmm. You know, because I was like, this just doesn't seem like me, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the thing, too, I caught earlier on. It doesn't seem to be coming from the place of, like you said, your Indian type that just, well, wants to withdraw and not be with people. You know, that choice to not participate in that exotic adventure.
Yeah, I mean, in the past, if I understood what you said, in the past, I would have that would have just been overridden. You know, I'll deal with the people in order to have the experience. Uh-huh. And then that other piece of, you know, well, if I was good, could go by myself, but not caring about that either, that's like, well, okay, well, there's something different.
Yeah,
About that. Because, I mean, that used to be the absolute number one. Be by myself, no accountability, nothing to show up for, get to do exactly what I want to do in some kind of, you know, interesting place,
yeah.
You know, and then
Yeah, that's what I was seeing. Like, you know, that could be a depressive reaction, like, oh, I'm not going to go, I'm just going to stay here,
mm-hmm.
you know. But what I'm sensing is a different from that. A sense of satisfaction is, you know, it doesn't go with the depressive experience, mm-hmm. you know.
Yeah, it could be. It's interesting, because it's interesting to feel satisfied.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because I just have not so much in my life. I mean, not just here, but, you know, just everywhere.
Yeah.
I think that, yeah, it's just like this, like it's this craving for something else, something other mm-hmm. to pull in mm-hmm. that's going to mm-hmm. satisfy me.
Mm-hmm.
And trying to do that and failing, you know, because, of course, there's no way that can possibly work.
Yeah.
But not really having something else to substitute,
yeah.
not really substitute, but, you know, not to have the real thing.
Yeah.
I truly don't know if that's what's going on, but there's a lot, it feels like there's just, things are sloughing off. And, you know, I just, to be quiet, that's enough.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everything, you could say in a lot of different ways, just to have some small way to contribute. That feels really good.
Mm-hmm.
To have good food to eat and a safe place to sleep. I know a lot of people in the world don't have either one of those.
Right.
Things like that. It's just, wow, this is good.
So seeing the extraordinariness in actually having a safe place,
mm-hmm.
Good food to eat,
mm-hmm.
work to do.
And work to do.
Actually
mm-hmm.
extraordinary.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And work that's supportive of a bigger than us, you know, mm-hmm. a larger whole.
Mm-hmm.
And it just seems to be some kind of a appreciation of that going on.
Yeah, I hope that's what it is, because I've been wishing for that without really wishing for it, kind of the whole time,
yeah.
my whole life.
Well, the person that has stayed course and stayed committed to
mm-hmm.
the monastic way of life
mm-hmm.
has been honoring, it seems like, that heartfelt wish
mm-hmm.
of that person.
Mm-hmm. That's true. Yeah, that's true.
Because mm-hmm. he could have bailed a long time ago and gone off on that exotic adventure and never returned. You know,
I'd like crazy to do that. I don't know how many times. But boy, yeah, I really am grateful.
Yeah.
I think a part of it too is just seeing into the real nature of the fantasies.
Mm-hmm.
Because when I do have an experience, it's never what it's said that it's going to be.
Yeah.
It's just regular life.
Yeah.
That's all it is, you know.
Yeah.
It's just regular life in a different place. and just that just eats away at the allure. You know, conditioning paints these things as, you know, they're so alluring and,
yeah.
you know, they're just got these vibrant colors that nothing can possibly have and, you know, all this kind of stuff. And but the reality isn't that.
Right.
That all of that actually is here.
All that,
you know, the vibrancy, that's here. It's not in the fantasy.
And that it seems that, it's all part of the journey to, like, check that out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, check out all those vibrant colors, check out all those toys, you know,
mm-hmm.
until...
And find out.
Find out, you know, oh gosh.
Yeah.
You know, it's not there either.
That's a good point, because I don't feel like I can be satisfied without the information.
Mm-hmm.
That's not it.
Mm-hmm.
No, this mm-hmm. is not a happy thing in itself. Nothing is a happy thing in itself. It's only what we bring to it.
Yeah.
And just to have that information, then there starts to be the room to let that stuff go a little bit.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Hafiz is up this morning, and I know I can't give him justice, but there is a little line from a poem that God is here to grab us by the hair and pull us around the room until we let go of all those toys that we're clinging to, that we think are so important. You know? But still, when people are, and this is part of the poem, but still when people are told, hey, God's in the room and he's in a playful mood, they run, you know. Most people aren't willing to let themselves be pulled around by the hair till they drop those toys, but wow. That's the process.
That's good.
Just
super quick. That's so interesting because just this morning I was listening to, I have my recordings on shuffle, and I listened to this one that was soon after a big, kind of brand new retreat that we had just had here a couple of years ago, and it was a guidance situation with someone else, and I was saying it's so interesting how a lot of people are reporting out depression, and what was offered was, so often the place where ego's not being reflected and there's not anything going on is so unfamiliar to us that it gets labeled depression.
Mm-hmm. Huh.
And
interesting.
It can be just truly just life, satisfied, just being here.
Wow.
But that it's so unfamiliar that we don't. That it gets labeled something.
Wow. Again, it comes back to that line to categorize every little thing,
yeah.
From a sensation to, an experience. Like, I'm unfamiliar with this, and so we go through looking like,
right.
This is the closest thing to depression.
Yeah.
That I don't know what it is, but
yeah.
It must be that.
And for ego, it's like, the one where I'm not in the picture. Oh,
yeah.
Depression.
Yeah, well, that'll put the kibosh on just being
right.
here and
exactly.
being,
yeah.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you all.